Великой победы! Ура!
everybody. Z in the chat. Thank you so much for tuning in to the dive. It's good to be back, everybody. After yesterday's stream, which so unceremoniously glitched out halfway through. It wasn't the internet. I don't know what it was. But for that reason, I need you to do something for me right now to make sure that we conquer all the disinformation smear artists on the internet. Drop a like on this stream. Drop a Z in the live chat. Subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. If you'd like to support the show, you can also do that by donating on our Patreon, our GiveSinGo, or our locals using the links in the live chat below. And lastly, if you really want to support the show, we've got the best merch on the whole internet available now. This stuff is amazing. You guys are grabbing it up like wildfire. We got our Make Ukraine Russia Again shirts and mugs, as you can see here. There's our Make Ukraine Russia Again shirts, and we also have our Make Ukraine Russia Again mugs, and they look great. They look absolutely stellar, so get them while you still can. Thank you so much for supporting the show. The link is in the pinned comment in the live chat or in the description. You can find the link to our merch. I'm going to send it in the live chat for all of you right now if you don't see it. Okay, there it is, there it is. And thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in on YouTube, on Rumble. Thank you to Vigor Jr. for the Rumble rant. You said, from Puerto Rico. Z's from
Puerto Rico. We are praying for Puerto Rico. We love Puerto Rico.
Thank you for the Rumble rant from Puerto Rico. And let's check in, everybody. Where's everyone tuning in from? Let's see it in the live chat. Who is the furthest from Bali, Indonesia, where we're currently broadcasting live out of Indonesia? Who's the furthest? Let's see it in the live chat right now. Thank you all for tuning in. Where's everyone tuning in from? All across this wide world. We got Ireland. Ireland, very interesting. We got Ireland, Yugoslavia, the former Yugoslavia. We got Honduras. We've got Arizona, Ecuador. We've got Minnesota. We've got New Zealand. We've got Oregon, Quebec, Trinidad and Tobago. We've got Ireland, Germany, Alaska, Australia, Austria, India, Texas, Palestine. We got Czech Republic. We've got Florida. We've got Ghana, India, Berlin. Brazil, California, we have got Jamaica, Argentina, North Carolina, Phoenix, El Salvador, Mongolia, Anaheim, we've got, who else, Somalia, we've got Rhodesia, we have got Yorkshire, we've got Minnesota with some flames, okay, who else we got, let's see in the Rumble stream, who do we got tuning in right now, New Jersey, South Dakota, Cheney, Washington, we've got, let's do a few more here, we've got St. Lucia, we've got Tukye, we've got Sweden, and we've got the Philippines and Portugal and Syria. Shout out to all of you tuning in, thank you so much for being here. We got a great stream ahead of us tonight, so let's get right into it, starting now. Okay, and you know, hopefully the stream doesn't kick out today, but if it does, my apologies in advance if it happens to do that again, but I know I'm hoping it doesn't. All right, everybody, let's get into this. So first I want to address this. You guys see I got in a Twitter fight with Pierce Morgan? That's not what we're talking about first. Let's talk about this. So today actually marks the one-year anniversary of when many, myself included, thought that the hostilities in Ukraine may have just been coming to an end. It was the dead heat of the Istanbul negotiations, which we all know what happened. But if you don't remember, I'll give you a brief primer on what went down. Many were thinking this was the beginning of the end of the hostilities in the special military operation, the war in Ukraine. Basically, the Russians and the Ukrainians seem to have been coming to some agreement on peace proposals. The Russians came forward with some statements saying that the Ukrainians had just come forward with a set of new peace proposal, further negotiations. There were negotiations in Istanbul and Turkey, and the Ukrainians had just come forward with a new set of, points that they wanted to bring up, and the Russians said that the Ukrainians had made some great strides in coming around to the terms that the Russians were basically demanding. Those, of course, were not limited to this, but the meat and potatoes of these points that the Ukrainians were making were essentially that Ukraine was saying, hey, look, we will guarantee neutrality for Ukraine. We will guarantee our neutrality. We will stop the hostilities. We in the Donbass, we will say that, we're even going to basically not cede the territory of Crimea and the Donbass, but they're going to exclude the territories of Crimea and the Donbass in these negotiations, which is basically like a big step towards, ceding these territories to Russia. And in return, Russia would also guarantee, would be like a guarantor of Ukraine's peace. They would effectively demilitarize. Other nations would presumably be guarantors of peace as well. Presumably maybe the US or the EU. But what ended up happening was, and also the other flip side of this negotiation, Russia was getting pretty much everything they wanted, at least for the beginning negotiations, and Ukraine would be guaranteed at least the possibility, without Russian opposition, direct opposition, the potentiality of joining the European Union, okay? So that was kind of the agreement in place that the Russians and the Ukrainians and those in Istanbul felt was very close to being achieved. The problem then being, of course, that Russia was the only nation that was able to serve as a guarantor to Ukraine's peace. The U.S. and the EU effectively refused that that offer of serving as a guarantor of Ukraine's peace. The U.S. and the U.K. and the EU said, well, if Russia is a guarantor of peace, we refuse to be a guarantor of peace. And that's when you had the U.S. fly Boris Johnson into Kiev to basically demand that Ukraine not negotiate a peace deal with Russia. You, of course, had Boris Johnson go in and say that they frowned upon the idea of Ukraine negotiating a peace deal with Russia and said that if you refuse to negotiate a peace deal with Russia based upon the terms that you're very close to striking with them, we'll supply the weapons needed to have a military defeat of Russia in Ukraine, which of course is just insane. But assumedly, if Ukraine were to move forward with that peace deal, even without the backing of the US, the EU, or the UK, with Russia as the sole guarantor of Ukraine's peace, it's highly likely that Zelensky would not cease to exist for all that much longer. So we now find ourselves a year later, after this all fell through, thanks to the US, thanks to the EU, thanks to the UK. And Moscow is outlining Ukraine peace demands again. Russia's deputy foreign minister has listed 10 steps Kiev must take before hostilities can end. Again, this comes from the deputy foreign minister, Mikhail Galuzhin. He listed these steps right here: stopping combat operations by Ukrainian armed formations and ending arms deliveries by Western countries, ensuring Ukraine's neutral and non-aligned status in its refusal to join NATO and the EU, reaffirmation of Ukraine's nuclear weapon-free status, recognition by Kiev and the international community of Ukraine's new territorial realities, demilitarization and denationalization of Ukraine, protecting the rights of Russian-speaking citizens, the Russian language, and national minorities, ensuring free cross-border movement with Russia, lifting by Ukraine and the West of anti-Russia sanctions, and the withdrawal of lawsuits and the cessation of judicial proceedings against Russia, its individual and legal entities. So that's actually the first time that Russia, in a list of demands, has demanded that. Again, I'll read it one more time because that's the first time we've seen that in a list of Russian demands. Lifting by Ukraine and the West of all anti-Russia sanctions and the withdrawal of lawsuits and the cessation of judicial proceedings against Russia, its individual and legal entities. So the removal of all sanctions, essentially, and, seizure of foreign assets, these sorts of things, lawsuits, judicial proceedings against Russians, Russian businesses, organizations, individuals,
And also, of course, the ICC, arrest warrant against Putin. And then lastly, we have here the restoration of contractual and legal framework between Ukraine, Russia, and the CIS, which that is actually a pretty big deal as well. And restoration using Western money of Ukraine's civilian infrastructure destroyed by the armed forces after 2014. So basically saying that, hey, look, Russia doesn't want to be the one that keeps rebuilding here. You guys are the ones that destroyed this. It's your fault. So you guys should be the ones who have to pay for this. And that's pretty standard for any war. Reconstruction takes place at the cost of the losing belligerent in the war, okay? So that's all pretty standard. We have some new stuff in there, which is definitely quite interesting, but for the most part, this is nothing new. These are the same old demands that have been made since before the special military operation even broke out on February 24th of 2022. But in reality, the Kremlin understands that the only solution here that they really see possible is a military solution. By way of the fact that, you know, Ukraine refused to implement the Minsk Accords, the Minsk II Accords, the Istanbul negotiations, the Israeli negotiations, or now even, you know, these current demands that are being put forward that Ukraine has said they're not going to negotiate unless Putin is out of power, unless Russia moves all their troops from the Donbass and Crimea, you know, basically 1991 borders, okay, which is insane. And Ukraine has now also this week refused these Chinese negotiations, all right? So Zelensky has tried to get Xi Jinping on the phone. He's been every single day this week been crying and complaining and whining and coping about the fact that Xi Jinping will not hop on the phone with him or will not meet him in person. But the fact is pretty clear. Xi said that he will do it if Zelensky decides to actually entertain the 10-point plan that the Chinese has put forward, that the Russians have already said that, yeah, they agreed to the basic tenets of. And Zelensky has said no to that, and that he wants China to understand the Ukrainian perspective. So overall here, the fighting, the situation looks like it's going to continue. Negotiations are, again, you know, at a standstill because of Ukraine, because of the West, because of the UK, because of the EU. The blame should, as always, fall on them. Just as it did a year ago when the Istanbul negotiations were nuked by the US and the UK. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. We got a lot more great news on the way. Be sure to stick around. Drop a like, drop a Z in the live chat. And we got some big news about Bakhmut that we are going to get into momentarily. First, let's hop into this story right here. Let's take a look at this. So, let's go to this story. Ever since 1 year ago, which we just discussed, which was the failure of the, or I should say the sabotage of the Istanbul negotiations between Ukraine and Russia by way of the Anglosphere diplomatic center of the world. Ever since then, Western arms deliveries to Ukraine have steadily increased, okay? And there's been different times where it's like, oh, maybe they're going to be decreasing their arms deliveries. But ever since then, it's been a pretty overall steady. If you look back at the history of the past year, it's been a pretty steady increase since, you know, late March of last year. Again, there's been a few packages that looked a little smaller. Maybe we're heading the opposite direction. But, you know, overall, we're now at a point where tanks are back in, new tank deliveries are back to Ukraine. We're talking about MiG deliveries to Ukraine, MiG-29 fighter jets. We're talking about depleted uranium shells to Ukraine. And even, you know, we're seeing the discussions of F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine as well. But first, I want to discuss this right here, because it shows just how futile the efforts are. We saw this week that German tanks have now officially arrived in Ukraine. These are the Leopard 2 German tanks. The Ukrainian military has received Leopard 2 main battle tanks from Germany, Der Spiegel reported on Monday. Kiev has already taken delivery of the vehicles from Poland. However, there is a lack of consensus on whether they will have significant impact on the battlefield. Now, why is that? Because Ukraine had lots and lots of tanks at the start of this war, and now they're either in ashes or they are broken down in mud piles somewhere on the front near the Donbass. Okay? The tanks left Germany last week and were handed over at an undisclosed location along Ukraine's western border, the magazine reported, citing anonymous sources. While the exact location of the handover was not made clear, the most Western supplied weapons to date have entered the country via Poland. Not only that, but we also have this. Ukraine is receiving British tanks as well. The first batch of British-made Challenger 2 tanks arrived in Ukraine on Monday. As reports said, Berlin also delivered 18 of its Leopard tanks to the country. The UK will send a total of 14 Challenger 2 tanks that will be armed with depleted uranium ammunition, a controversial munition that is radioactive and linked with cancer and birth defects in Iraq, where U.S. forces commonly refuse the rounds. Now, this radioactive depleted uranium ammunition supply is not containable. This is what I always like to point out. It's like Ukraine says, we care so much about the Ukrainian civilians that in the midst of a war zone that is scattered with Ukrainian civilian personnel, Ukrainian civilians, you know, they're going to use depleted uranium shells, depleted uranium, which is going to have long-lasting impacts long after this war is over, long after all the people that made the decision that got us into this war are long past dead. You know, this depleted uranium, the radioactivity of it is going to remain. It's going to cause birth defects. It's going to cause cancer. It's going to cause death, despair, bloodshed, loss of life for untold amounts of individuals that the U.S., the West, the Ukraine all says that they care so much about protecting the health, well-being, and safety of. And I'm not going to show you images of, the impacts, the health impacts of depleted uranium. But, you know, I encourage you, if you're not aware of it, go look it up on the internet right now. Look up health impacts, human impacts of depleted uranium shells. Because if you've never seen it before, well, you're in for quite the shock. And I encourage you not to do this if you're currently eating or if you have a queasy stomach. Because this is not for the faint of heart. The images, the impacts of depleted uranium shells. Yet the UK is now actively sending depleted uranium to Ukraine, I guess, to use against Russians, their brothers, in a war that is, there's so many civilians. Even in Avdiivka, even in Bakhmut, there are still civilians that remain. Not a lot, but there are civilians, okay? So you're putting all these people's lives in harm's way in the lives of generations to come. For what? I guess for the cruel inhumanity of Western war, because this is what they've done before. And you know what the West, last thing I'll say about this, you know what the West's justification and defenses in sending these illegal violation of international law depleted uranium shells to Ukraine is? Well, we've used them in war for years. They have a track record. We've used them in war for years. So obviously it's okay. Well, by that logic, you know, we've used nuclear weapons in war for years. I mean, it was years ago that, you know, nuclear weapons were first used by the U.S. So are you fine with Russia using nuclear weapons? Are you fine with Russia using depleted uranium shells? Because they're not doing that. I guess that's the question that should be asked. If you're using them, then are you okay with Russia using depleted uranium? Are you okay with Russia going to war against the U.S. in the United States and using depleted uranium in the United States? Are you okay with Russia using depleted uranium shells on Western Europe? Are you okay with that? Because I wouldn't be okay with that. I don't think anyone should be okay with that. Just in the same way that I'm not okay, or no one should be okay with the UK supplying Ukraine with depleted uranium shells either. Ukraine, who's actively shelling tons of civilians all across Ukraine. Okay? But here's the fact of the matter. Ukraine cannot protect themselves against the Russian artillery, munition, and jets that Russia has. Russia's newest jets, the Su-35, have given Moscow's forces increasing dominance over the skies. Russia's latest generation of Su-35 fighter jets have capabilities that Kiev's forces can't neutralize, senior Ukrainian government officials told ABC News. The newest Su-35s are equipped with very effective radar and long-distance rockets, enabling them to attack Ukrainian jets and provide air support for Russian ground troops, the unidentified source said in an article posted on Monday. Ukraine does not have capabilities to counter this threat, he said. Kiev sees Russian air superiority as a real risk, the official admitted, making its push for more air defense systems from the U.S. priority number one. This is a problem, another unidentified official said. What we keep telling the Americans is that in the end, there is no solution than to give us fighter jets. He claimed that Russia has 12 times more military aircraft than Ukraine. Ukraine really wants those F-16 fighter jets. They really don't care about MiG-29s. That's not going to do them anything. What, they're going to get four MiG-29s from Poland or, you know, whoever? It's like, this is not going to do anything at the end of the day. Okay, but what's very interesting is that now we're seeing the Russians tap into this new Su-35 technology. If you've seen the fighting and if you've read the reports, even from Ukrainian personnel, even from the Kiev Independent within Avdiivka, the reason why Avdiivka is falling so quickly to the Russians is because, and why the Russians are maybe even going to take Avdiivka before Bakhmut, is because of the fact that the Russians did heavy airstrikes all throughout the pincer that they're creating, which is just like a couple to a few kilometers long now, in Avdiivka. By establishing heavy airstrikes in this boiler that they've created in Avdiivka, it allows the Russians to very quickly take the territory, okay? Which is a bit more difficult to do in Bakhmut, which has far heavier, you know, civilian infrastructure, complex civilian infrastructure. You have these underground bunkers, these underground industrial zones, which require a lot of fighting and, you know, a lot of fighting through artillery fighting. And also, I mean, yeah, it takes infantry fighting as well, but the main fighting in Bakhmut has been artillery munition fighting. Okay, so that's very interesting to see, but that's not all. We also have this right here. The United States has long since been trying to surpass the hypersonic technology or even get close to the hypersonic technology that the Russians have. So Russians have this new Su-35 technology. They also have extremely dominant hypersonic missile technology. And the United States this week has admitted to another failed hypersonic test. It was expected that this may be the United States' big breakthrough. They have not had a breakthrough in hypersonic missile technology due to the fact that they have difficulties in the production of the metals used for the hypersonic missiles. I believe it's like some sort of a steel, aluminum composite. I forget what it was. I remember the Duran did a good breakdown of this a while ago. But this is what they're now saying. The U.S. Air Force has revealed at least the fourth failed test of a hypersonic missile system made by defense contractor Lockheed Martin, suggesting it's more likely completing a system built by Raytheon. The one we just had was not a success, Secretary of the Air Force Frank Kendall told members of a U.S. House committee on Tuesday. We did not get data that we needed from that test, so they're currently examining that to try to understand what happened. So reports on the street are now indicating that, yes, the U.S. Air Force is going to be moving away from Lockheed Martin to instead Raytheon to move forward with this hypersonic missile technology. Whether or not Raytheon will be able to complete the job is up in the air, probably unlikely as well in the near future. And that's why Russian officials now say that Moscow has weapons that can destroy the U.S. They've come out and said this quite clearly. The U.S. can't develop this hypersonic missile technology. The Russians do have it. And because they have this and the West doesn't even have, you know, their Patriot batteries can't stop Russian hypersonic missile technology, that's what this means. Nikolai Petrushev, the Secretary of Russian Security Council, warned Monday that Moscow possesses weapons capable of wiping out an enemy, including the United States. Russia is patient and does not intimidate anyone with its military advantage. However, it does possess advanced, unique weapons capable of destroying any enemy, including the United States, in case of a threat to its existence. All right? American politicians, captivated by their domestic propaganda, somehow remain certain that in case of a direct conflict with Russia, the United States is capable of delivering a preemptive missile strike, following which Russia will be unable to retaliate. This is short-sighted absurdity, which is also very dangerous. And Russia is basically saying that, no, we have the preemptive capabilities with our hypersonic technology. The United States cannot stop us, okay? And look, if I was in the position of Ukraine right now, I would be worried too. If they understand that the U.S. can't even stop the Russians, what makes Ukraine think that they can stop the Russians? I must remind everyone that the Russians have not, you know, allocated a full-scale war operation to what's going on in Ukraine yet. Yeah, sure, average Russians are being sent to the front right now. Yeah, sure, the Russians are conscripting even, soldiers out of prison and giving them 6 months of fighting time with Wagnerites and saying after that you'll be free. But they have not allocated full-scale war operations and, resources to this. They are not in a war economy even close to how the EU is in a war economy. So to think that there is such a decisive victory for the Russians at this point, things can change, I know, but to say at this point there's such a decisive victory for the Russians in the fighting in the main, theaters of battle in Ukraine already, just by way of a special military operation resource mobilization, should be very worrying for the Ukrainians. And that's why these Ukrainians who are now being reported on in The Guardian are saying that, yeah, we did our training in the UK and we don't really want to return home. Ukrainian troops have returned home after completing training in the UK on British tanks that are expected to be used in a counteroffensive against Russia. The troops traveled to Britain shortly after Rishi Sunak announced in January that the UK would send 14 Challenger 2 tanks to Ukraine. The MOD could not confirm the exact location of the tanks, but it's being reported that they're there. The UK Defense Secretary Ben Wallace said Ukrainian soldiers returned to their homeland better equipped, but to no less danger. The crews received training that included instructions, included how to command drive and work together as a Challenger 2 tank crew, effectively identify engaged targets. Okay, now it's just so insane. It's like in the middle of a war, they're training troops on British tanks, on German tanks, soon to be probably U.S. tanks. This is not a feasible way to defeat an enemy by having all of these various tanks in a given country and expecting that you're going to retrain your own military on how to effectively use them in battle. It's just not possible. Okay. This is not going to go over well. So these, Ukrainian troops are not all that happy of going home, but they're being sent home to fight in these British Challenger 2 tanks now. Okay. Which is unfortunate for the Ukrainians, as you can imagine, but this is war. This is what's happening. This is what they are being forced to do. In many cases, innocent Ukrainians who have no predisposition to hate Russians, no reason to hate them, in many cases probably even understand the qualms of the Russian political class and Russian civilization, are being sent to the front right now, okay? So this is what's happening, and the Russians are going to respond in kind with what they've been responding in kind with the entirety of this war. And for that, they're going to be called war criminals. They're going to be called dangerous terrorists. They're going to be called a terrorist state. You know, there's going to be more arrest warrants for people like Putin and high-ranking military and political officials in Russia for doing what they effectively see as a necessary evil, responding to the military escalation of the West. And how could you not respond to this? I mean, take a look at this video right here. I'm sure many of you saw this. This is a video of a woman with a small child getting pulled over for allegedly passing a convoy in Ukraine. The Ukrainian soldier calls her scum, scolds her for not speaking Ukrainian. I thought you could speak whatever you wanted to in Ukraine. I thought it was a free democratic country. I thought this is the beacon of democracy, according to Biden. So here you have this. So she's being called scum and scolded for not speaking Ukrainian. The Ukrainian soldier then threatens her, calls her names, and starts shooting. Take a listen.
Что происходит? Что они творят?
Ты мразота, правила дорожнего руха, знаешь?
Не разговаривайте со мной.
Ты колонну бачила? Ты людей моих бачила, техніку?
Да.
Хлопця мого, якого ти ледве не збила?
Да. Я никого не сбивала.
Мразота, документи свої давай.
Подождите, пожалуйста.
Швидше, швидше!
Пожалуйста, сейчас. Возьмите.
Так, слухай мене. Мустафаєва Аїда Сапферовна.
Так.
Ще раз.
Дайте.
Я побачу тебе на цій дорозі.
Дайте.
Ще раз, сволота. Ти будеш
нарушувати.
Слухай мене, бля. По-перше, розмовляй зі мною державною мовою, свиня.
Лічите,
свиня, свинячою мовою зі мною не розмовляй.
Ти
що, тупа? Я не подивлюся. Я зараз не подивлюся на дитину.
Very brave Ukrainian soldier fighting against this single mother with her child in the car, right?
Говорите, пожалуйста, не нужно ничего делать.
Ты тупа?
Нет, я не тупа, не нужно. Что вы делаете? Что вы делаете? У меня ребенок маленький в машине, что вы себе позволяете? Кошмар!
How brave the beacon of democracy, Ukraine, the brave Ukrainian soldier shooting at the car of an unarmed mother with her child for speaking Russian.
Успокойся, тихо, успокойся, пожалуйста.
Real tough guy. Yeah, doing all that because she's speaking Russian rather than Ukrainian. But, oh, don't we find it interesting that Dmitry Polyansky, the first deputy permanent representative of Russia, he just posted this on Twitter. One of our partners shared with us this photo made during one of the recent UN meetings. It turns out that the Ukrainian delegation is fighting everything Russian, listening to a Russian interpretation of the United Nations active meeting. Wow, what a betrayal. So you can see here on the photo, Ukraine delegation literally in their own photo is listening to a Russian translation of the United Nations meeting. That's the Ukraine delegation. So for speaking Russian in Ukraine right now, you'll be shot at, even if you're a single unarmed mother with your child in the car. You'll be tied to poles and stripped naked as you're beaten and tortured by Ukrainian soldiers as they spray antiseptic dye in your face, temporarily blinding you. In some cases, you'll fare even worse, but if you're a Ukrainian representative, a part of the Ukrainian delegation at the United Nations, and you want to listen to the United Nations meeting in Russian, well, that's all fine and well. It's like, it's so sick and twisted, and still Western leaders have the audacity to say stuff like this right here. The prime minister of Estonia just came out and asked Russians to take anti-Russia sanctions more seriously. You're not taking them serious enough, guys. Russians allow themselves to joke on the internet about each new package of sanctions. They openly mock our work at the European Union. I beg them to take this seriously and show at least some respect for the sanctions that we're applying on civilians as we starve their country and as we strip them of their basic rights. They need to take this more seriously. We're so serious. That's the state of the West. That's the state of Ukraine. Sick and twisted. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. We got a lot more news on the way. Be sure to drop a like on this stream. Drop a Z if you'd like to support the show. As always, you can do so by donating on our Patreon, our GiveSendGo, or our Locals linked below, or by grabbing our amazing merch, which you can find linked in the live chat or in the description, the top links in the live chat in the description. There's our merch. Get your Z merch right now. It's hot. Or you can get the Make Ukraine Rush Again. I love that shirt so much. I'm very proud of that shirt. You can get it right now while you still can. It's a lot of you are grabbing it. There's our brand new merch. I love this one right here. Take a look at this. That's some good stuff. Make Ukraine Russia Again. Okay, let's get into the next story. We are going to be talking about this, and then we're going to go into the update on Bakhmut, okay? So, this is great. I love this so much. So, India's foreign minister, Dr. S. Jaishankar, is an absolute beast. I love this guy. You know, he's the guy that did that sit-down with that British pawn a few months ago, and I think it was in India when they did the sit down, and she was trying to basically scold him and, you know, passive aggressively like condemn him for, you know, doing business with Russia and taking in Russian oil and turning it into refined petroleum products for the EU at an upmarked price. Basically condemning India, saying you're taking the side of Russia, you're not being neutral, you're not being pro-Ukraine. And he was like, look, we choose to do what we want. We're a sovereign nation. We're neutral here, and we're going to choose to work with whoever we want to work with. It's our business. We have a population much larger than the United States's. Soon we're going to be a larger economy than the United States. We can do what we want when we want. So I love this guy. And, you know, when he was at this event this week, and he was asked about his remarks on, you know, India's government and their role in the international order and why India is not basically bending the knee to the George Soroses of the world, to the Open Societies Foundation, to the pro-Ukraine Slava Zucchini community of the world. And this was his response and breakdown. I love it so much. I had to share it with you. He takes George Soros and the Open Societies Foundation and the globalist establishment to the cleaners. This is Foreign Minister Jaishankar of India.
Dr. Jaishankar, a lot of your commentary was focused on democracy and furthering democracy. And different forms of democracy. There are occasional comments that we see on the undermining of democracy in India, most recently in the context of the BBC, and just yesterday.
The BBC says that you're undermining democracy in India. The BBC says you're undermining democracy.
Today at the Munich Security Conference, George Soros spoke on many issues. Mm-hmm. But specifically on open and closed societies.
Oh, George Soros. George Soros says you're undermining democracy. But Ukraine is a bastion of democracy. You know, Ukraine that's terrorizing its civilians right now, they're the bastion of democracy.
And called on institutional reform in India. How do you, as Foreign Minister of India, explain this when you're dealing with your Quad ministers in particular, as well as others?
Well, I actually made 2 points. One, how the world is changing. It is rebalancing. It is less Euro-Atlantic. I don't think everybody gets that. I think old habits die hard. I mean, very candidly, there are still people in the world who believe that their definition, their preferences, their views must override everything else. So, since you mentioned this.
And speaking of the undemocratic state of India, right? We have some breaking news for you. You're getting it here first, folks. You're getting it here first. Breaking news. Saudi Arabia has just announced they will be joining BRICS Plus in August. So, Saudi Arabia just struck some huge deals with Syria, with, you know, kind of wrapping up the war in Yemen. With Iran, the unthinkable is happening by way of Chinese and Russian diplomacy with Saudi Arabia. And breaking news, Saudi Arabia just said that they're going to be joining BRICS Plus in August. Huge.
Specific example. I don't know how familiar people are with what was said at the Munich conference. Essentially, Mr. Soros said India is a democratic country, but he doesn't think the Prime Minister of India is a Democrat. By the way, a few years ago, in the same conference, I was there at that time, he actually accused us of planning to strip millions of Muslims of their citizenship, which of course didn't happen. It was a ridiculous suggestion. But you have to understand what this actually means. I could take a view that the individual in question, Mr. Soros, is a old, rich, opinionated person sitting in New York who still thinks that his views should determine how the entire world works. Now, if I could only stop at old, rich, and opinionated, I would put it away. But he's old, rich, opinionated, and dangerous. You know, because what happens is when such people and such views and such organizations they actually invest resources in shaping narratives. You know, I spoke about globalization. Now, what globalization does is it actually creates a lot of the seamlessness of globalization, which creates all the opportunities, also allows, you know, narratives to be shaped, money to come in, foundations to go about their agenda. Now, in this particular case, I mean, it is very clear that he has very strong political preferences. He actually thinks that, I mean, doesn't matter that this is a country of 1.4 billion people, we're almost there, whose voters decide how the country should run.
So when you start to have countries like India say stuff like this about George Soros, you know that the West is in collapse. It's an utter civilizational, diplomatic, hegemonic collapse, okay? And with the breaking news we just heard, by the way, I mean, I have to say this again for those of you that are just tuning in. Saudi Arabia just announced they're going to be joining BRICS Plus in August. With news like that, this is absolutely the end times for the petrodollar, for U.S. hegemonic rule. This is the end of the end. There is no can we save it? There is no like, oh, maybe we can protect it still. This is the end times for U.S. hegemony.
He actually thinks, well, if, you know, and again, I cite him as an extreme example, okay? But it's there are other, manifestations of this in different countries, where people like him think an election is good if the person we want to see wins. If the election throws up a different outcome, then we actually will say it's a flawed democracy. And the beauty is all this is done under the pretense of advocacy of open society, of transparency, etc. So our generation, we have grown up with concepts like regime change, which influence operations.
He says our generation has grown up with concepts like regime change, backed by the West, of course. Now, with all these nations moving closer to Russia and China, you can expect, I mean, okay, in Turkey with Erdogan, I mean, there's already regime change operations underway. There's an election coming up, and John Bolton and many of his deep state neocon goons would love to get Erdogan out of power. You look at Saudi Arabia, same thing. We discussed that quite a while ago. I think it was when Saudi Arabia said that they're going to reduce OPEC plus oil production by like 2 million BPD. And then the U.S. came out like literally 2 days later and said, we're concerned about democracy in Saudi Arabia. We think we need to help them find some democracy in Saudi Arabia. Now that they're officially joining BRICS Plus in August, you can bet your ass there's going to be some efforts to find some democracy in Saudi Arabia.
Now, you can call it what you will. I mean, to me, this really looks the same with a gloss of some kind of do-goodism on it. So for me, it's actually necessary today that we have today a serious conversation on democracy. You know, I when I look at my own democracy, I mean, I have today a voter turnout which is unprecedented, electoral outcomes which are decisive, electoral processes which are not questioned. We are not one of those countries where after the election somebody goes to arbitrate in court. Okay, we don't have any hanging chads either. And you know where you actually say, "I will sit in judgment over the verdict of voters." Now, my sense of democracy is the voters are supposed to decide, and it worries us. It worries us because look, we are a country which went through colonialism. We know the dangers of what happens when there's outside interference in whatever guise in your politics. If you do this kind of scaremongering, like millions of people will be deprived of citizenship, it actually does real damage to our societal fabric. Because somebody out there believes you. And somebody, and you don't leave it to accident, by the way, you back it up with an operation. So you create that kind of fear psychosis. And then you use that to validate your original judgment. So I do think today between, you know, whose democracy, whose globalization, why, you know, the transparency of how global processes work. These are real issues which need to be debated.
So there you have it. Dr. Jaishankar, Foreign Minister Jaishankar, taking George Soros, the Open Societies Foundation, and the globalist establishment to the cleaners, just as every leader should in sovereign nations all across the world. All right. Between Jaishankar and Lavrov, I mean, you've got world-class diplomatic leaders right there. Absolutely incredible. All right, let's get into the next story, okay? Let's talk about Bakhmut, because Bakhmut, we've got some big news. But drop a Z in the chat right now if you're watching. Drop a like on the stream. You know what to do. Let's talk about Bakhmut, okay? Because this is quite something, all right? So, all right. Where should we start off with this? Let's start off, if there's one thing that hasn't changed about the war in Ukraine, it's that Bakhmut is still the center, the epicenter of the heaviest, most costly, most deadly fighting to date. The war and the battle in Bakhmut has been raging on now for hundreds and hundreds of days, with likely tens of thousands of soldiers who have lost their lives or been killed or injured in action and fighting in this city. The city is extremely important to both Russians and Ukrainians. Unfortunately for the Ukrainian military, they are losing more and more of Bakhmut day by day. Now, as I reported yesterday, the past few days of fighting in Bakhmut have encompass mostly clearing out of the regions that Russia has already taken. One could presume at that point in time that after they finish clearing out the territories that they've already claimed from any Ukrainian soldiers that might be hiding out in residential buildings or industrial zones, that the Russians would again make a new assault on new territory in Bakhmut closer to the city center. And that's exactly what we are witnessing today. Let me share with you what's going on. The situation in Bakhmut, PMC Wagner fully control the districts of Sobachevka now and Budinovka. Fierce fighting continues in the central area, Freedom Square, in the Vodokano area, in the Azov industrial area, and in the area of the northern headquarters. If we can assume that the Ukrainian military still has thousands and thousands of troops in this brief, small region that fighting is still taking place in, one can also assume that it's getting cramped for them as the fighting continues to rage on. Not only that, but we have this news as well. This is the big news of the day. The new Bakhmut update by Live UA Map, which is a pro-Ukraine website, says that there is now only a roughly 4.5 kilometer gap before the city gets completely encircled. This is the smallest it has ever been. The Ukrainians are just about clinging onto the TO-504 highway supply line. In addition, we have reports that Wagner PMC fighters are now storming the building of the district administrative or administration and the city council of Bakhmut, as you can see here in the red circle. So this is the district administration and the city council of Bakhmut, essentially the governmental building. Okay, so this is the central governmental building of Bakhmut. The Ukrainians did not want to lose this, because once they lose this and the Russians put the flag, the Russian flag, above the city administrative building and the city council building in Bakhmut, that's a wrap. The Russians then move forward and clearing out the remainder of Bakhmut, and that's all she wrote. And why that's bad, we can discuss in multiple ways. I mean, we have what Zelensky has previously said. when he pointed out the fact that if Wagner and the Russians take Bakhmut, they will have a straight road into Kramatorsk, which is the last line of fighting, of defense for the Ukrainians in the Donbass. Once Kramatorsk falls, that will be the end. Okay, we're going to have more commentary on what this means, what taking Bakhmut will mean, even from the perspective of Zelensky, in a moment here, because he just gave a new interview with the Associated Press. But first, I want to discuss a bit more about the state of the fighting in this region of Bakhmut in the city center. The armed forces of Ukraine are also retreating to the city center from Bakhmutskaya and the Blagoveshchenskaya streets. I'm sure I butchered that pronunciation, but basically what you have here is fighting is now moving away from the northeast of the town that has been solidified. From the east of the town, it's been solidified. This has been fully taken over by the Russians and cleared out, and now they are moving into the city center, where they are soon to probably be taking the city administration building and the city council building. Word on the street is there's active firefighting going on in these buildings as we currently sit here and speak. But that's not all. Here you have Bakhmut. Assault detachments of the PMC Wagner have occupied the territory of the city market, which is new territory as of within the past 24 hours that's been occupied by the Russians. And here's a brief comparison for you. Here are two statements on the Battle of Bakhmut, the largest of the 21st century so far, one by Zelensky and one by Prigozhin. Prigozhin is the head of the Wagner PMC military group. Here's Zelensky's statement. Some Western military analysts have questioned why Ukraine is willing. Some Western military analysts have questioned why Ukraine is willing to suffer so many losses to defend the territory, arguing that the city is not of strategic significance. Zelensky argued otherwise, saying any loss in the war will give Russia an opening. He predicted that if Russia defeats Ukraine in Bakhmut, Putin would set out to sell a victory to the international community. If he will feel some blood, smell that we are weak, he will push, Zelensky said, adding that the pressure would come not only from the international community, but also from within his own country. Our society will feel tired, he said. Our society will push me to have to compromise with them. So that's Zelensky basically saying, look, if the Russians take Bakhmut, Putin will be able to sell this on the international stage to China, to India, to anyone and everyone, to all the BRICS partners, maybe even to Western countries in the EU, that this is the end, and that Ukraine must begin to compromise, okay? So that's the first time we've heard that from Zelensky, basically saying he is very close to being in a position of where he will be forced to compromise with Russia. From Yevgeny Prigozhin of the Wagner Private Military Group, we have this statement right here. Prigozhin said that a Russian victory in the Battle of Bakhmut would destroy the Ukrainian army and be a great turning point in history. The battle for Bakhmut today practically destroyed the Ukrainian army, Prigozhin said. According to him, if PMC Wagner wins this battle, then only one Russian army will remain on the chessboard. At the time, he made it clear that this battle could be the last for Wagner itself. If Wagner PMC dies in this meat grinder and takes the armed forces of Ukraine with it, and thus enables the Russian army to continue to defend the interests of Russia, then we have fulfilled our historical role and we can put an end to this. Okay, so that's Prigozhin basically saying, yeah, we might go out fighting for Bakhmut. We might end the Ukrainian military, but go out in the process. Okay, and that will be our role in history. And I don't think that's going to be the case. But I also, if that is the case, I wouldn't be surprised given the fact that Wagner has been drawing up conscripts from the Russian prison system to fight on the front. So we'll see what happens. They're clearly a very capable military unit. So I feel as though the Russians would be happy to continue utilizing their resources. Maybe in Avdiivka, there's reports, according to some, obituaries, that there are Wagner PMC already fighting in Avdiivka, but we'll continue to see. Now, what's interesting about those two statements between Zelensky and Prigozhin is that I think for the first time ever in all of history, and maybe for the last time ever in all of history, we have the leader of the Wagner private military group, Yevgeny Prigozhin, and we have the president of Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, who are fighting out the largest battle of the 21st century, who actually find themselves in agreement on a given statement about this battle. If Russia wins, this will effectively be the greatest turning point in not just this war, but in global history. Okay, I think that they both agree on this. If you listen to both those statements, they pretty much agree there on those 2 points. Okay, so that's a huge statement from Zelensky, and that's a huge statement from Prigozhin. Ukraine also reportedly is seeing this progress of Russia in the eastern frontline city of Bakhmut. This has been reported on by Reuters. And here's that statement from Zelensky he gave to the Associated Press on a train during this interview.
Is this part of why you are fighting so hard in Bakhmut? Because a lot of military analysts will say that strategically it's not that significant.
Because that will be victory for him.
He will
sell this victory. He will sell this victory to West, to his society, to China, to Iran, to all the countries, to Brazil, to Latin America countries, not to Latvia, Litva, Estonia. Of course, they really understand, you know, from details, and they feel this dangerous because they are their neighbors. But he will sell it to his society. That was the first step. Now, wait a minute. I will have decision with Ukraine. Then another step.
Is this part of why you are fighting?
So clearly a distressed Zelensky there riding on that train with that reporter from the Associated Press basically saying, look, yeah, if they take Bakhmut, they're going to be able to convince the entire international community, excluding the West that is ardently supportive of Ukraine. They're going to be able to convince everyone, Africa, Latin America, China. They're going to be able to convince the important players here that Ukraine has to begin compromising. Zelensky has to begin compromising with Russia. Okay. And that's concerning for Zelensky, given the fact that he was promised by the West that if he stopped the Istanbul negotiations, which, by the way, would have put Ukraine in a far favorable position to what they're currently in right now, that the West would provide Ukraine with the weapons necessary to have a military defeat of Russia on the battlefield to get Ukraine back to their, 1991 borders, okay? Which would be Crimea and all of the Donbass. Now, even the Institute for the Study of War is beginning to admit how grim the situation is. PMC Wagner already controls the center of Bakhmut. The city is likely to be under the full control of her fighters until the end of this week. This is predicted by Western war monitoring companies like the Institute for the Study of War and Critical Threats. In addition to that, the ISW reports that Russian troops have captured already 2/3 of Bakhmut. And again, that's only going to continue as the situation unfolds later this week. And here is the sentiment from troops on the ground in Bakhmut right now. This is with DW News, an interview with a Ukrainian troop in Bakhmut. A Ukrainian army soldier was asked about the losses of the Ukrainian army in the Bakhmut direction by DW, and this was his response.
Страшно.
It's very, very scary, and I think about the tens of thousands of dead and about those guys who smoked with you in the evening. And a few hours later, they're gone. That kind of confirms the reports that we've seen from various commanders and soldiers in the Ukrainian military who've basically said that, once you get sent to the front in Bakhmut, the average life expectancy is about 4 to 5 hours. It confirms what they have long since said. He goes on to say, I think about them every day. And can't even complete the interview because he's crying his eyes out. It's a travesty. It's extremely sad. None of this ever had to happen. None of this should have happened. Here's another Ukrainian soldier fighting in Bakhmut saying that the defense of the city is based on huge losses. So confirming those that have, called the city. We've seen Western press call it this. We've seen Ukrainian press call it this. We've seen Ukrainian soldiers and Russian soldiers, Russian press, Russian military officials. Everyone now pretty much confirms that Bakhmut is a meat grinder. And this soldier right here confirms the same. And lastly here, this is the video that's been making most of the rounds. A Ukrainian soldier speaking, what I've been told is speaking in Russian here, saying that you will pay for everything. I don't have anything to add. This man is 100% right. Let's hear what this Ukrainian soldier from Bakhmut has to say. Because of you bitches, fuck you bitches, people are fucking dying. You don't give an F. You don't need anybody. Y'all don't give a fuck. Raise your salaries and took some shit away from military bonuses. You all pray that we die. You will... I'm not the only one. Clearly in distress, crying his eyes out. I lost friends because of you. I survived miraculously. No idea how I survived. What are you doing with us? You don't have enough? Here, old people have... You grabbed too much already. You ran that country into the ground. Still not enough, he says. How long can this be tolerated? Oh, shit. He says, how long can this be tolerated? Now you want to screw over the conscripts. These boys already came home, and now you're sending them out again. We are dying for your kids, because you can't agree. You can't lose your millions. You grew impudent. We need a regime change in this country. Chase away these 450 people, or how many you are, starting with Zelensky, ending with I don't know who. You will pay for everything. You will pay for everything. What are you doing to the people? What are you doing to the people? You don't have enough money, or what? Off working a coal mine? Stealing, killing, and getting money from all that, deceiving the people?
Пидоры ебаные, сука. Продолжайте, сука. Посмотрим, чем это закончится. Хулаки ебут.
So that's how the Ukrainian military feels about their command right now. We need regime change in this country for all 450 of you, or however many there are of you. Haven't you had enough? Haven't you made enough money? When will this end? Well, for Zelensky, clearly it won't end anytime soon. As long as he can send more men to Bakhmut, he will, as he turns the city into even larger of a meat grinder than it already is. Heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. All right. On that note, on that somber note, I want to say thank you to those of you that are helping get the truth out to our, out to the world, really. Those of you who support our show on Patreon, on Locals, on Gibson Go. If you'd like to support the show and support the truth, in the real news, consider donating to our links below in the description, our Patreon, Gibson Go, and our Locals. In addition to that, I'd like to thank our sponsor for today's stream, which you can find linked below in the description or linked in the live chat right now. And that is the one, the only American Financing. I want to share with you a little bit about American Financing right now, but first, I want to send the link to their website, AmericanFinancing.net/Jackson, in the live chat for all of you who are watching. Again, it's also linked in the description for those of you who are watching this after the fact on the pre-recorded broadcast, okay? So I know most of you are probably feeling the impacts of inflation from the Biden administration. You know, when it comes to filling up your car, grocery shopping, buying clothes, buying food, doing whatever, home repairs, everything is more expensive. And that's why credit card debt has soared. For the first time in 20 years, over the past 12 months, credit card debt has soared over $1 trillion in the United States, making it, again, the largest increase we've seen in 20 years. So if there's a homeowner, if you're a homeowner, there is a way out. You need to call my friends at American Financing because they can help you put together a plan to pay off high interest debt and create meaningful savings for you every month. They're helping save American families on average $700 to $1,000 per month. And they're doing this with the help of their salary-based mortgage consultants, okay? There's no obligation to get started with American Financing. You can go check them out right now for free. And if you call them today, or if you check out their website today, AmericanFinancing.net/Jackson, you can actually delay up to 2 mortgage payments, giving you greater savings up front. So go check them out again using the link I'm sending in the live chat, AmericanFinancing.net/Jackson. They're a great company with thousands of positive reviews on Google, or you can check them out by giving them a call at 888-976-5555. They've been in business for over 20 years, almost as long as I've been alive, and their mission is to save you money. Okay, so give them a call at 888-976-5555. Okay, and tell them I sent you, Jackson Hinkle at the Dive. All right, thank you to American Financing for supporting the show, and thank you to all of our amazing supporters on Locals, on Patreon, and on Give, Send, Go. All right, on that note, let's move forward into this story right here. So this week, there was a tragic shooting, school shooting at a Christian school, I believe elementary school in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm sure most of you are fully well aware of all the details of this shooting. It was a trans, domestic terrorist that carried out this shooting at this school. 3 9-year-old children were slain in this bloody act of terror by this trans terrorist against these Christian children. In addition to that, 3 adults were also killed in the shooting. Rest in peace to all those that we lost in this shooting. It is extremely tragic, but it also invites a broader discussion. What is the real problem here? We know for a fact, a sad fact that I hope is reversed, because I want these people to be helped. I want them to find God. I want them to address whatever issues they have in their lives. We know for a fact that between 41 and 43% of all transgender Americans, I believe the stat is that they commit some form of self-harm, which is a startling fact. It's very sad. But it is a disproportionate fact, unlike any other subsect of the American public that we can think of, okay? Even far worse than combat veterans who come home from serving in places like Fallujah or places like, Afghanistan or Syria. You know, it's a very, very, very startling fact. It's a serious problem. And the problem is that there is a mental health crisis amongst this population, okay? And this is also why we're seeing, people like this commit these acts of terror. This event in Nashville, this terroristic act in Nashville, is not the only time we've seen, trans or non-binary individuals take up arms to slay innocent Americans, children, and school shootings, okay? In fact, this is a string of recent events that have happened recently. So it really blows my mind when people like Pierce Morgan, someone who, oddly enough, I've been finding myself having, I don't want to say all-out agreement, but, some points of agreement with over the past few months, with his new show, more than ever before. Pierce Morgan, someone who I never thought I'd agree with on much of anything, I'm starting to have different things I'm looking at. I'm like, I kind of agree with him on this. He's even like Andrew Tate, he's had some pretty good defense of Andrew Tate, which is quite something. But Pierce Morgan tweeted this out the day after this shooting in Nashville. He said, Yesterday, 3 9-year-old children and 3 adults were murdered in the latest U.S. school mass shooting. The district in Nashville, Tennessee is represented in Congress by Representative Andy Ogles. This was his family's Christmas card last year and posted a photo of his family with these assault rifles in front of their Christmas tree. And, you know, it's just such a British moment to declare that, you know, guns are the problem. You need to take away the guns. Of course, the British stooge is going to say that guns are the problem. Keep in mind, this is why he literally lost his job at CNN when he had a show at CNN. He had like a primetime show at CNN. He replaced Larry King on CNN. And he lost his job because he fundamentally could not connect with the American public because he kept telling us that we should lose our guns. Okay, this is one of the most insane British City of London cucked mind fucks I've ever seen in my entire life, saying that we should give up our guns. You understand how many violent criminals are stopped each and every year with guns? Good guys with guns? Good guys with guns can actually stop bad guys with guns, okay? And the fact of the matter is, bad guys with guns are always going to find a way to get more guns if their guns are taken away, because they're bad guys. That's how this works. They don't care about the law. They don't care about, gun confiscation. They don't care about this stuff. They will find a way. That's why there are such rampant gun issues and gun violence in Mexico, despite the fact that they have extremely stringent gun policies on the books. All right. Or you look at Chicago. Chicago's another great example of this, you know, but this is not too uncommon for someone like Piers Morgan to point out. And even Isabella Riley Moody, friend of the show, she said, guns don't kill people. Evil people kill people. Piers Morgan replied to this with another brain dead take. And he said, with guns. Well, by that logic, I guess you could say evil people kill people with cars. Evil people can kill people with knives, swords, kitchen utensils. Should we ban all of that too? Should we? I don't know. Should we? I mean, like, I feel like a car in a short period of time can in some cases do a lot more damage than a gun can. So should we ban cars? Should we ban airplanes? Should we ban private jets? Should we, it's like, what else are we going to ban? Because this becomes a very scary road that we head towards. That's why Karl Marx so famously said that all efforts to disarm the working class should be met with fierce opposition. Maybe you didn't know that. Yeah, Karl Marx was a staunch defendant of gun rights, just like our founding fathers. Founding fathers that people like Piers Morgan hate with every fiber of his being. He also hates people like Alex Jones, who, again, on his CNN show that he used to have, that he lost because he failed to resonate with average Americans, he was invited Alex Jones to a debate, and this was the ramification of that decision. Take a look.
The guns, and I'm here to tell you, 1776 will commence again if you try to take our firearms. Doesn't matter how many lemmings you get out there on the street begging for them to have their guns taken. We will not relinquish them. Do you understand? And that's why you're going to fail, and the establishment knows, no matter how much propaganda, the Republic will rise again when you attempt to take.
That's one of the greatest moments of TV history. Watch that one more time. They don't make TV like this anymore.
Our guns. The guns. And I'm here to tell you, 1776 will commence again if you try to take our firearms. Doesn't matter how many lemmings you get out there on the street begging for them to have their guns taken. We will not relinquish them. Do you understand? And that's why you're going to fail, and the establishment knows, no matter how much propaganda, the Republic will rise again when you attempt to take our guns. The guns.
You know, it wasn't just that. Alex Jones went on this incredible tirade throughout that entire debate, and it's one of the greatest moments in human history, I think. I'm going to put that out there. I think it's one of the greatest moments in, like, modern human history. You also have this moment right here when Alex Jones absolutely destroyed him by using his own stupid British accent in the same debate.
Murder, I can speak in this accent as well.
Yeah.
The
but is that
government,
what you believe?
Hitler firebombed his own Reichstag, Pierce, to bring in martial law in Germany, April 27th, 1933. Governments have staged terror attacks throughout history, or allowed terrorists to attack, as a pretext to invade and enslave the populations. I probably own more than 50 firearms. Many of them have increased in value 2, 3, or even 4 times. I sleep very comfortably outside Austin, okay. Texas, knowing Alex. That I can defend my family.
Okay, Alex Jones.
Infowars.com.
This is the man who wants to deport me from the country.
To murder Americans. I can speak.
Are we back? I think we're back. I think it's fine. Anyways, let's just double check to make sure there's a stream okay. Yeah, stream's good. Stream's good. Right? We good? One's in the chat if we're good. One's in the chat if we're good. It's stream glitched out again like it did yesterday, but I think we're back. I should have just waited yesterday. Yeah, we're good, I think. Anyways, yeah, that's my favorite video. I love this video. Watch this one more time. I love this video so much.
To murder Americans. I can speak in this accent as well.
Yeah. But is that what you believe?
Hitler firebombed his own Reichstag, Pierce, to bring in martial law in Germany, April 27th, 1933. Governments have staged terror attacks throughout history or allowed terrorists to attack as a pretext to invade and enslave the populations. I probably own more than 50 firearms. Many of them have increased in value 2, 3, or even 4
firearms.
4 times. I sleep very comfortably outside Austin, okay. Texas, knowing Alex. That I can
He sounds like Thomas Hardy in Peaky Blinders.
In my family.
Okay. Alex Jones, this is
Infowars.com.
Infowars.com, Thomas Shelby. So I quote retweeted Piers Morgan with this brilliant Alex Jones dissection of his feudal Second Amendment revoking argument. And Piers Morgan actually replied, if you can believe it. He said, "Ah, yes, the voice of reason, Alex Jones." And then we ratioed Piers Morgan's ass. So if you want to contribute to the ratio of Piers Morgan, I'm actually going to send the link to this tweet in the live chat for all of you right now. And you can contribute to the great Hinkle roast of British Piers Morgan. This is basically like 1776 all over again, because I don't know, he has 8.4 million followers and you're really going to get ratioed by me that easily. So click the link in the live chat, ratio Piers Morgan, and send it to everyone, send it to your friends, have them ratio Piers Morgan, send it to your mom, send it to your dad, send it to your grandma, have your grandma ratio Piers Morgan, have all freedom loving members of your family ratio Piers Morgan. Have your ex-girlfriend ratio Piers Morgan. Make sure she ratios Piers Morgan. I'll send it to our Rumble community. Make sure our Rumble community ratios Piers Morgan. Everyone go ratio Piers Morgan and let him know that in the face of this violent trans terrorism that plagues our country and just struck the hearts and the minds of every American in this Nashville, Tennessee terror attack, we will not relinquish the right to our arms. We will address the mental health crises of our fellow Americans. We will save those who are suffering. We will help them find God. But the last thing we will do is relinquish our right to arms. Never again. All right. On that note, folks, I'm out for the night. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. It's been a great stream. I hope you have a great rest of your night. For those of you who are watching on YouTube, we are going to raid our friend Haas of the Infrared Show. I believe he's still live. Let me double check and see if this man is still live. Let's see. Is Haas still live? No, he's not. All right, well, on that note, everybody, I'll catch you all next time. Please consider supporting our show by dropping a like, subscribing if you haven't subscribed yet, donating to our show using our Patreon, Locals, or GiveSendGo links, and grabbing our new merch using the link in the description below and the link in the live chat. I salute you all. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, I will see you next time. Actually, I won't be live tomorrow, but I will see you next time. Until next time, everybody, peace out. Have a great rest of your night. As always, fuck Dick Cheney. Let's get some Z's in the chat. And I'll see you all very soon. Peace out.